Back here on 102.5 The Game, Darren McFarland and Willie Donick here live at Bridgestone Arena. We're inside Jack Daniels Barrel House at our broadcast site where we are for every Predators home game. Tonight it's the Predators and L.A. Kings. Remember, 30-minute later start tonight, national television on NBC Sports Network. 7:30 drop of the puck. I'll have pregame for you starting at 6:30 right here on 102.5 The Game. So just keep that in mind. A sold-out game tonight. If you're coming down, you get a little bit extra time. Let's head up to Baltimore. We teased it in the first segment. Been talking to this guy for a long time. And Willie and I believe the first time was the 2000 run Baltimore Ravens made to the Super Bowl when they ended up beating the Giants in the Super Bowl. Kerry Collins as the quarterback, but they came in here and they beat a Titans team that was 13-3 that year in the playoffs. And I think that's what started everything with Gary Stein. So you know he's been covering the Ravens for a long time, and now he joins us. Gary, how you doing? Good morning.
Good morning, guys. And you're right. I think you're right. I think it was during that 2000 season. So what was that, 17, 18 years ago? My God.
I know. Isn't it hard to believe? Our hair was a lot
really
darker
is.
Then.
Well, I actually had hair back then.
Willie?
Yeah. I'm in his boat. I'm in Gary's boat.
I remember Gary. Remember, this is what jumped out. Gary was so emphatic. In fact, I think we end up having you on after they beat the Titans, and we had you on like every week, and you're like, the Baltimore Ravens are going to win this game. I'm just telling you. Guys, they're going to Oakland. They're going to beat the Raiders. They're going to win this game.
I had a good year that year. I haven't been quite so prescient since, but, yeah, that year was a good year for me.
So the Titans have obviously parted ways with Mike Mularkey, as you know. They've hired Mike Vrabel, Houston Texans defensive coordinator. Everybody remembers him. His playing days, and now he has started assembling his staff. It was short-lived, the retirement of Ravens defensive coordinator Dean Pease. You've been around him. He's been around the game for a long time. What do you know? What can you tell us about Dean Pease coming to Nashville?
Well, I think the one thing that sticks out for me for the 5 or 6 years that he was here, remember he got here in 12, and he actually was the defensive coordinator that first year when the Ravens won the Super Bowl in 12. So the one thing that sticks out about him to me is that the players love him. To a man, on that defense, no matter what the position is, line, linebackers, the back line, et cetera, there's not one player on that team. And, you know, I mean, there's a lot of platitudes, and players are going to say the right thing and all that, and I get that to the media, but this was sincere. He's like a father figure. I mean, he's an older guy. He's 68 years old. He's been in the game for 45 years. They all love him. He's a player's coach. They believe in him. He's got a lot of experience. You can dial up a lot of different defenses. And I just think that that's kind of the one thing about him. He's very easy for the players to trust and love. So I think he'll have that. And I think if you ask Mike Vrabel, he'll tell you the same thing because he had that relationship with Dean Pease when Pease was the linebackers coach in New England and then eventually the defensive coordinator. So that kind of transferred over. But I must tell you, though, I am surprised. I thought that Dean was very, and he is a very sincere guy, and when he said he was going to hang it up, I really believed he was going to hang it up. So I guess the lure of being able to coach with his son was probably what did it. I don't know. I haven't spoken to him since, but I'm surprised that he ended up taking this job with the Tennessee Titans.
Well, that was going to be my follow-up, is were you surprised when he announced his retirement in a short amount of time, he was right back in the game. And you're right. We haven't had a chance to speak to him. The media has not spoken to any member of the staff. We had Mike Vrabel on the show last Friday, but at that point, no names were even out there yet. And the weird thing is this story broke because Dean Pease's son was a high school coach in Colorado, and that high school put out that he was leaving to go join the Titans staff on Twitter and Instagram. And so social media broke that story here in Nashville that and to coach with his dad. That's how the news circulated all the way back to Nashville that they were going to be a part of Vrabel's staff.
Yeah, and I had a chance to talk to a couple players since the announcement privately, and I'm not breaking any news here necessarily, but they were a little surprised too. So I think that there is, you know, it must be the lure of being able to coach with his son. I don't even know what real credentials his son has to be on the staff. I mean, I think it's highly unusual that you go from a high school coach in Colorado to on the staff of a team, you know, a defensive staff of a team in the NFL. But I guess it must be a quality control thing or something like that. I'm not sure. But, again, I guess the lure of being able to coach with his son was probably what did it.
What happened at the end of the game against Cincinnati, and how much did that factor in? What was the reaction? We know that it's a look, social media is brutal. The fans can be tough. That was a tough loss. Man, I watched that thing, the whole thing unfold, and I was like, wow, I can't believe the Bengals just won this game and the Ravens are out of the playoffs. Obviously, it changed the whole playoff picture. It changed everything. What was the reaction when Baltimore gagged that game away at home?
It was shocking. I don't think anybody in that stadium or in that press box or anybody watching really thought that the Bengals were going to win that game. I mean, it was 4th-and-12. On that particular drive, the Ravens did commit a couple penalties. And this is the one knock on the resume, and we can talk about this, okay? Giving up fourth-quarter leads, especially under Dean Pease, has been an issue. And I got my own opinions on it. We can certainly get into it. But shock was the reaction. I can tell you this, in the locker room after the game, I don't think I've seen it. I've been around a lot of despondent locker rooms because there's been a lot of despondency in Baltimore. There's been a lot of elation, too. But I don't think I've ever seen the locker room like that. I can tell you that Terrell Suggs threw up. I can tell you that Matt Judon was sitting by his locker on the floor in a daze for a half an hour. And I can tell you, this is just from observation, that other players were in the same boat. And it was very different. And it's not like they weren't forthcoming to the media. They stood and took it. I mean, you know, they're pretty good when it comes like that. None of them said, hey, we're not talking. But there was, that kind of shows you the level of shock that that team had undergone. If you want to talk about the actual play, they were in man the whole drive, and they were holding up their end of the bargain, and then they went to zone on 4th-and-12. And for some reason, this defense does not take well to zone coverage. I forget the receiver, was it Tyler Boyd? I forget already. Kind of split that seam, found a crack, caught the ball, nobody made the tackle, they were out of position, and he galloped into the end zone for the touchdown. And that's one of the knocks on Dean Pease, is he goes conservative at key times in the games and it comes back to bite the defense. And I can reel off right now on my fingers and toes all the times in his tenure that the team blew a fourth quarter lead and lost the game.
Interesting. We will remember that you said that. So if it wasn't for Dick LeBeau being here and being around him and not even, thinking about it twice, because when you're around him, then no longer you think about his age, but if you didn't know any differently, it would be a real discussion piece. I mean, he was 80 years old and certainly didn't look it, feel it, sharp as a tack. If it wasn't for that experience here, we would all be probably going, okay, you're hiring a 68-year-old defensive coordinator. You're around him. So we've learned really not to question age, shouldn't even come into it, but you're around him. What is he like at 68? Is that something that factored into it as well?
I think he's a young 68. I don't think that, I don't think the age is a factor. I don't think he's on the downside necessarily. He's very creative. He's vibrant. He's energetic. He's all the things, I really don't look at 68 as being a negative here. I'm not even sure that being 80 was a negative for Dick LeBeau. I don't know Dick LeBeau personally, but I obviously know his body of work. Certainly he was, and this is another conversation to have. Dick LeBeau was better when he had better players, okay? And to be honest with you, Dean Pease was better when he had better players. Keep in mind, the Ravens defense in 2012, when he came here, still boasted Ray Lewis and Ed Reed. They may not have been at the pinnacle of their careers, but even on the downside of their careers, they're better than 95% of the defenders in the NFL. And they also had a safety by the name of Bernard Pollard, who you guys probably remember, who was the thumper that they needed behind those guys. And after that, Pollard was gone the next year, and Ray retired. Ed was still there for, I think, one more year maybe. I'm not sure. They didn't have any of those guys, and the Ravens have never replaced those guys. So I'm not going to sit here and blame Dean Pease for the defense's demise over the last 5 years. Statistically speaking, they weren't bad, but I mentioned the fourth quarter meltdowns. Look, when you lose a Ray Lewis and Ed Reed, arguably two of the greatest defensive players in the history of the game, it's hard to replace those guys. And Dean Pease isn't a magician. He's a football tactician. But at the end of the day, once they step between the white lines, it's on the players. The coaches are limited in their ability to execute. They can draw it up, but the players have to execute. And so I would I would say that the Ravens' inability to replace guys like Lewis and Reed, and maybe it's impossible, maybe they'll never replace those guys, had a lot to do with this defense kind of faltering over the last 5 years. But I don't think his age is an issue.
Gary Stein is with us, and he is with 105.7 The Fan in Baltimore. We're talking about the profile of Dean Pease, the brand-new Titans defensive coordinator, who was a Super Bowl-winning defensive coordinator in Baltimore for the Ravens after he was very successful as a defensive coordinator, Super Bowl winner for the Patriots. One of, what is it, Darren, two? Is there anybody, there's only one or two others that have ever taken two different teams to a Super Bowl mm-hmm. as a defensive coordinator?
Yep.
So, Gary, you mentioned the rap, or the one thing, if you're really scrutinizing, having trouble protecting leads. You used the example of switching from man to zone in that that fateful game against the Bengals on the last day of the season. As you look back as a whole, what would be talked about as a theme? Is there any one thing that had you believing this is why it happens more often than you think it should?
I think it's because lack of talent, Willie. They have good guys. The Ravens' defense is full of good football players. There's not a lot of great football players on that team. There are not a lot of what I'll call alpha male personalities on that defense. You know, even a guy like Terrell Suggs, who will be in the Hall of Fame, and he's a great defender, comeback player of the year, defensive player of the year, Super Bowl champion. You can't take any of those accolades away from him. He's still not of that same personality like a Ray Lewis and Ed Reed and even a Bernard Pollard. I'll just point to him for a moment because he had such an integral part to play in that defense in 2012. They're devoid of that. Again, they're good, they're talented, but they just don't seem to have that killer instinct, that dominating, suffocating brand of energy that they bring onto the football field that, you know, the great defenses of the past have had, the Ravens, the Bears of 85, the Steelers of the 70s, you know, even the Purple People Eaters and the Fearsome Foursome way back in the day, 60s and 70s. And I know the Purple People Eaters never won a Super Bowl, but regardless, the Oakland Raiders of old. Ravens don't have that kind of defense. They're not that kind of personality. And so I think if there was one overall thing, I would think that at crucial times, you know, Pease probably said, look, you know, I'm gonna go conservative here because I just think it's the right thing to do in this situation. So I wouldn't necessarily blame it on tactics alone. I would blame it on tactics based on personality.
Right.
And the Ravens, right, you know, and I mean, also if you go back through the games, I know you don't watch them as close as we do, the Ravens have committed a lot of penalties that have kept drives alive in the fourth quarter. And you know, I don't even know where to go with that. You know, the fan in me says, oh, the officials are terrible. But I know they're not. And I know they're not out to get the Ravens, although the fans think they are. But it just happens over and over again. And so maybe he thinks, you know what, let's minimize the damage and go zone. And I don't know. I mean, that's it. I mean, that's the million-dollar question, guys. Nobody can get a straight answer.
So, Gary, what are the biggest issues facing the Ravens going forward here? After the disappointment of not making it, after making a nice run to put themselves in pretty good position, what are they facing in this offseason?
I think the issues facing the Ravens are pretty much what they've been kind of over time, and that is that the defense is probably good enough. Okay, back in the day, the defense was great. The defense still, despite all the things that I just said, is probably still good enough. But the offense is inconsistent, and they're devoid of playmakers. You know, they found Alex Collins, really by accident. He was a marginal waiver wire pickup after he was released by Seattle. I don't think anybody really saw what was going to happen with Alex Collins. But their receivers over time have been, you know, meh, you know, nothing special. There's nothing wrong with Mike Wallace, but he's not a number one. You know, there was nothing wrong with Steve Smith, but he really, at that point in his career, wasn't a number one. They've drafted terribly. Rashard Perriman is beyond a disappointment. You know, Michael Campanaro, Chris Moore. I mean, really, in the holistic look at the NFL, who are those guys? People outside, nobody even knows them in fantasy football, right?
Right.
So, right, exactly.
That's when you're really unknown, when nobody knows you in fantasy.
Exactly, right? When nobody drafts you in fantasy, you're a nobody.
I mean, that's the barometer, right? So, I mean, they got to find guys. you know, for whatever reason, this club has done a great job drafting defense, but they've done a horrible job drafting offense. And that's what they're facing. They have to find guys who can make plays and score points and make sure that the defense isn't on the field and on the line with 2 minutes to go protecting a one-score lead in every single game they play.
All right, Darren, it's time, as we're doing all week here, it's time to get the pick from Gary.
Now, get the sheet out.
The Eagles are right up the road from Baltimore, and here they are in the Super Bowl against the Patriots. Gary, I know they didn't. The Ravens didn't get a chance to play head-to-head. I'm looking at it. I don't think they played the Eagles or the Patriots here, but your thoughts on the matchup?
Right, they didn't play either one this past season. It would be hard for me to imagine, although not impossible, Nick Foles beating Tom Brady. I admire the Patriots for what they've done. How can you not? You may not like them, but how can you not admire what they've done? And I know the cheaters, you know, they're going to come out. People are going to say, well, they cheated. But, all right, so they did. And probably most teams do. And the Patriots would have been great even without it. And who really even knows what happened with the Deflategate? That's all, you know, who knows. So I'm going to take the Patriots. I mean, I do think the Eagles have some things that work well in their favor. I think they, you know, their front four pass rush could be effective. The Giants did that in the two Super Bowl wins over Brady and flustered him. The Eagles have the ability to do that. They have the ability to run the football with a bevy of running backs, probably the best quartet in the NFL. Peterson, the coach, the head coach, is a pretty creative offensive mind. So there are elements there where I see the game being close. Ultimately, I do think the Patriots win the game, and if I had to pick a score, I'd say something along the lines of 27-24.
You are the second 27-24 Patriots. Jason McCourty yesterday told us Patriots 27-24. The only person this week to take the Eagles is Dave McGinnis.
And if you get down to it, he has a special relationship
with Jim Schwartz in his heart. Jim Schwartz.
He's a big Jim Schwartz fan. I think he might have been a little biased. He admitted. He said, I'm a little bit
biased.
Well,
I mean, Jason McCourty may have been a little biased, too.
And he admitted
that.
He's
got a twin brother that plays for the Patriots.
Yeah, I think there's a little bias there. I do think the Eagles have the elements. I wouldn't say they misused them. I know they didn't use Ajayi as much as I thought that they would. But I think in the playoffs and in a game like this, the combination that they can bring together, the power of Jai and Blunt, and then the kind of elusiveness of the other guys, could be a turning point in this game. I think they have a chance.
Hey, take good care of our buddy Caleb Joseph up there, your catcher for the Orioles.
I love Caleb Joseph. I didn't realize
Who doesn't love Caleb Joseph? Gary, everybody loves Caleb.
Dude, he is one of the great guys of Major League sports, period. Fantastic guy, down to earth. However much money or however little money he makes in the league, it'll never change him. Great guy.
Nope. And we'll probably see him tonight. He's a Nashvilleian. In the off season, he comes to every Predators home game. We'll probably see him here tonight at the arena.
That's awesome. He's not going to know me by name, but I'm in there all the time. Tell him Gary Stein from 105.7 says hi.
Well, next time you see him,
if you just ask him about the Predators, and his eyes will light up. I guarantee.
Right. If you just mention the Predators, mention you come on this show, and you're good to go.
Totally, dude. Guys, I really appreciate that. I will definitely bring it up.
Gary, always good to talk to you. Thanks for doing this.
Shame. Thanks, guys. Best
Gary Stein, 105.7, the Fan in Baltimore. Always good to talk to him.
Now, Darren, when we come back, we're going to talk about. We just talked about Caleb Joseph. Mm-hmm. There was another little development. With another Nashvilleian baseball player, somebody who got a pretty good race.
Let's
talk about that when we come back.
We'll do
that to
wrap up the first hour, this Thursday edition on 102.5 The Game.